What's up, everybody? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650 Friday edition of the show. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drantz. Also covering the team at The Athletic, Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's going on, Drantzer?
Canucks win again.
Yeah, what else is new?
It must be a day that ends with Y.
Another comfortable win for the Vancouver Canucks.
I think Rick Tocchet and the Canucks need to convince Lindholm that he's debuting
every game. Every game is a debut of some sort.
Yeah. So it's like debuting in the flying skate. That'll be one. That's a good one.
Well, that was yesterday.
So debuting in your normal home jersey.
Yes.
You've still got that.
Hockey Net in Canada debut at home.
Ooh, there you go. Sure. Yeah, no, but you know what? We have to get thin. Like, whatever it takes.
Debuting against the Winnipeg Jets as a Canuck?
They need to come up with debuts because the guy kills it. The debutante.
The debutante. That's right. Just coming out ball after coming out ball for Elias Lindholm here as a member of the Vancouver Canucks. Another two goals for him. Let's get right into it. Lots to get into today, so let's do the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
Your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks today, February 16th. And, stop me if you've heard this one before. The Canucks win. They're back at Rogers Arena. They beat the Red Wings 4-1 and extract revenge in the best way, in all seriousness, in the best possible way on Jake Walman by beating the team. And then Nikita Zadorov hitting the gritty late on him.
Yeah.
Which is that was always the best way to do it, rather than running around.
Oh, I think it was a masterclass.
Go win and then have some fun.
Legitimately, I don't think you could have handled this better.
No.
I mean, Garland went after him a little bit early, right? But didn't get penalized for it. Just like it was a sign to the player, keep your head up.
There was never any sign of we're focusing on anything other than the win.
Yes.
Right? You know what I mean? It was never like, because we had this discussion with Yannick.
They chased him
a bit. Well, they knew about it, but it wasn't like, it was always secondary to, by the way, we're going to win first.
Yeah.
Then maybe we'll pay some extra attention to you.
Well, and then they score three goals with him on the ice.
Yeah.
So he eats three dashes. Zadorov, who scores, does the gritty.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I even loved Ian Cole's commentary with Dan Murphy beforehand. You know, like, if you don't want someone to celebrate like that, don't get scored on.
Yep.
I just thought it was honestly just about a perfect way to have handled it. Canucks come out on top. Wah wah for Jake Walman.
And the
Jake Walman.
I thought the Zadorov quote after the game too as well.
Yeah.
I think he used it twice actually. He liked it so much. First in a walk off with Bick and Sad on the postgame show, and then also in the media scrum where they asked him if he's been practicing the gritty. Not as much as the guys in red do, which is pretty good. Pretty good from Nikita Zadorov. That element of it was handled basically as well as it possibly could have been by the Vancouver Canucks. As you mentioned, you know, a lot of focus on obviously Elias Lindholm playing his first game in Rogers Arena as a Canuck. Also focus on the third line, given what they would do without Dakota Joshua there. Overall, what do you think of the game from just kind of a run of play perspective?
Yeah, I thought it was a dominant first half for Vancouver. I don't think they were necessarily at their best, quote unquote, or whatever. It didn't feel to me like they generated a lot of really high quality scoring chances.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it dominant.
I thought they controlled the game and just were able to set up shop in the Red Wings zone at will, 5-on-5 for the first 30 minutes of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then it felt like too many penalties kind of took the wind out of their sail in the second half and just sort of allowed, I mean, Detroit didn't hang around and that the result wasn't really in suspense, but Detroit was testing them perhaps more than you'd have appreciated, in part because the Canucks were shorthanded so often and in part because there's a cost to being shorthanded so often. But for the first half hour, it was like every time the Canucks wanted to establish zone time, they were able to. That's what it felt like to me. I thought the Hughes-Hronek pair was excellent. I didn't know that anything else from the team's game was at as high a level as that pair. But yeah, I mean, it was a really solid performance in building the lead, in my view. I thought it was one of their better games in a couple weeks.
I don't think it was dominant, but it was just there was also no doubt about who the better team was at any point in the game. You know what I mean? It was just kind of that we don't need to be dominant necessarily to show that we're better than the Detroit Red Wings. And I think the biggest thing that stands out to me is just they were never under any pressure, really. There were very, very few like hairy moments. I know Thatcher Demko had to make a few big saves, including one on Patrick Kane late on the penalty kill. But at 5-on-5, it was just a very calm game by the Canucks. Now, do you want to see them, as you said, maybe generate a few more scoring chances? Yeah, absolutely. But if that's your kind of baseline to fall back on against, you know, good but not great teams like the Detroit Red Wings, I mean, you're going to win a lot of games. You're going to have a lot of results like that night if that's kind of your not your highest gear, but a notch or two down, and you're still able to play like that.
Yeah,
that's kind of my takeaway.
I agree with that. The defense played again. I just, you know, I'm honestly just sometimes so surprised by the way that this team's able to manufacture goals absent really high dangerous opportunities. You know, like we've seen it 10, 15 times this season. I mean, long distance JT Miller goal off a turnover, mm-hmm. long distance Elias Lindholm wrist shot. That wrist shot was sick, by the way.
It was a really good shot. Yeah. Still from a way too far out for, you know, the goalie wants it back,
goalie
obviously.
100% wants it back.
But that was a wicked shot.
It was a wicked shot. And then Zadorov, blink if you miss it. And then the Lindholm, they had one goal basically off a real, like, in the home plate area scoring chance. And we've seen this same script from this team so often that at some point it's just like, yep, that's just kind of what they do. Especially if your goaltender's having anything like an off night.
Mm-hmm. They will find a way to put pucks past you, no doubt about it. What do you think of the Swedish line, Nils Höglander with Elias Pettersson and Elias Lindholm? Because I know Rick Tocchet had a lot of praise for, or at least some praise for Nils Höglander after the game. And you know, we were talking about on the show yesterday, it feels like he's deserving of a long look in the top six at this point. And, you know, that line clicks a little bit. He makes some good plays, and it feels like Tocchet is starting to appreciate more and more what Höglander can do in that type of role.
I just want to tell everyone in advance that, like, Swedish House Mafia will never be a nickname for a line.
First of all, everyone needs to chill on the line nicknames. Like, just there's been like one that's really stuck in the last like 30 years of Canucks history. It's the West Coast Express.
Well, Lotto's stuck.
Lotto line. Sorry. Okay, two. The Lotto line.
Yeah.
There's been two in the last like 30 years that have really stuck. So let's just like
the mattress line?
Yeah.
That was good at least.
Yeah, that's like funny, but it's like that's a footnote at best.
I just don't like every time they put three Swedish players together or whatever, it's like Swedish House Mafia. And it's like, stop it.
Yeah, unless it's gold, unless it's like solid gold, we don't need to do the line name thing. Just for shorthand, we just call it the Swedish line. That's fine. Doesn't need to be more than that. We don't need to go any farther.
Or you can just call it the Lindholm line.
That's
move
true.
On,
that's
like
true.
A normal person. Anyway, I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I thought Höglander played really well, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. I thought Lindholm played really well. I still like Pettersson better in the middle, but I definitely agree with Rick Tocchet that Lindholm's a center.
Mm.
You know, so it'll be interesting to navigate at the end of the day. If you have too many centermen, that's a good problem to have, right?
That's
like,
a very
we're
good
not
problem.
Gonna very we're not gonna spend time to breaking that down. I thought the Miller line was better than the Swedish line.
All right,
personally, I really like that Miller Besser Suter fit. Honestly, I really like it. I want to see more of it. And then I honestly thought the most interesting thing was Garland less than 10 minutes 5-on-5.
Mm-hmm.
He played the fourth fewest minutes, which I think that line wasn't bad or anything. It didn't have its normal joie de vivre.
Nope.
Its normal Joshua
driven. Yeah.
De vivre.
That was an intensely stupid joke. I'm sorry.
I loved it. Hit me in the solar plexus. Anyway, here's my question to you. How much does Joshua's size help keep Garland and Bluger's minutes higher?
I think probably a lot.
I mean, I wouldn't have thought that yesterday, talking about how that line might perform, but seeing the usage last night, I started wondering, like, you know, does Joshua's defensive reliability and his size earn more rope for that line in general? Early returns, only one game. Doesn't sound like Joshua will play Saturday, so we'll probably see this sample expand a little bit further. Hopefully not too much further. But, you know, that to me is a major storyline because that line's been such a crucial part of how this team plays. And, you know, if Garland's going to play, like, true third-line, fringe fourth-line minutes, I mean, you are taking some clicks off your fastball. So that was sort of the one spot of, not concern, just a question that I sort of had stemming from last night's game. And I guess one with some implications for, hey, maybe this team should make sure to prioritize getting more forward size at the deadline.
With size, right. Yeah, like, so that you can kind of avoid that situation if there's an injury or something like that.
If you really do need Garland to be paired with a winger with some heft and defensive reliability, if you're going to feel comfortable using that line heavily, then I actually think forward size is like maybe the thing you need most. One more guy with some size, hopefully they can kill some penalties.
By the way, we told everyone to chill with the line names, and apparently our listeners interpreted that as an invitation to just send in line name suggestions. So I mean, our inbox is just flooded. I'm not going to read them out loud. I'm reading them, obviously, to myself. But you know what, you guys? Hey, it's Friday. You do you. Send in whatever you want today. Anything goes, truly. Okay, let's move on from the game and the headlines.
Are any of them good?
Well, no, there are a lot of the same suggestions, you know, IKEA line, et cetera. Like,
oh, yeah,
things
yeah.
like that.
Classic.
Right? Yeah, so classic. Let's move on to the broadsheet, just because there was a lot. You know, Rick Dhaliwal was on Halford and Brough, and it was, even for Dhaliwal standards, a very newsy hit with lots of interesting tidbits. And I also wanted to pass this along quickly from Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts, talking about what the Canucks might do. Very interesting quote from Friedman. "I just don't believe Rutherford is done. I think he could do anything." And he also says, yes, they'll consider chemistry because they've had such a good year. How much do you want to rock the boat? But he goes on to say, "I know his MO, and it's to be aggressive." So that is Friedman with his thinking on what Jim Rutherford and the Canucks might do ahead of March 8th. And what a delightful quote. He could do anything. It gets the mind turning, thinking, okay, what could that possibly mean? And look, I think he's right. Like, I could see anything from, you know, a fifth round pick for a depth defenseman, and that's all that happens between now and then, to like multiple players from last night's lineup being out and new guys coming in and replacing them. I could see the entire spectrum and anything in between those 2 points.
Yeah, let's go. I mean, if something big comes their way, I'm sure they'll pounce. I like that. I like the idea.
100%.
Especially with the way this team is positioned. I love the idea of using, you know,
and honestly, every win to me is more like, you could say like, well, hey, they're winning, do you need to tinker? But to me, every win pushes more in, this is the year, right? Like, every time they win a game, every time they have a good showing, to me, that moves the needle slightly to let's go out and try to do something else to move the needle even more.
Right. Yeah, I'm okay with that logic. But for me, it's more that I like the idea of buying at the deadline with the long term in mind. I like the Hampus Lindholm, Charlie Coyle, Boston Bruins model. If you're going to pay anyway, right? If you're going to pay and part with assets anyway for a rental, might as well bring in real value. Might as well bring in, you know, something to strengthen like a 3 or 4 year, that Demko Hughes window that we've been talking about on this program anyway, in for next season and beyond. So I would very much like to see a big swing. But again, it matters more that the right piece shakes loose.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, in some ways it's out of their control. You can want to be aggressive all you want, but the piece has to be out there. The other player has to be out there.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'd be super enthusiastic, obviously, about that type of deal, like a longer-term fit type deal. Mm-hmm. Would you share that level of excitement for, like, Chris Tanev?
I'd be really excited for Chris Tanev. Very excited for Chris Tanev.
And I think
now that might be the only other rental, plausible rental, that I'd be very, very excited about.
Well, I just don't think you'd view Tanev as a rental.
That's
you
probably
see what
fair.
I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I guess that's the fly in the ointment, right? We'd be analyzing it like a rental, but it really might
but
not.
But realistically, there'd be a very good chance it wouldn't be a rental. Yeah that's fair. But yes, I would be very excited about Chris Tanev. Speaking of Chris Tanev, Rick Dhaliwal, as I mentioned on Halford and Brough, His thoughts on the Canucks' potential trade deadline plans says their preference is not to trade another first-round pick, but notes that hockey people can always change their minds. He also goes on to say, you know, the price on Tanev is steep. The Canucks haven't given up on pursuing Tanev and says, when you like a player as much as you like Tanev, you gotta get creative. And that's why, as much as we've heard, you know, oh, is it going to be too steep a price for them? How does the salary cap work? Again, think back to Patrick Alvin saying, you know, talking about how this trade came together. And every day, Jim Rutherford is saying, stay on it, stay on it, stay on it. If they like a player, as much as it appears that they like Chris Tanev, and we know that they do, it's just really hard for me to rule out Jim Rutherford finding a way to make it happen. Whatever hoops they have to jump through, if there's any front office that's going to be creative and aggressive enough to do it, it feels like it's this one.
The only mitigating thing that I'd add into that equation here is, you know, I do think the Canucks have already, if the Canucks were willing to part with the first to get Chris Tanev,
sure,
they would have done it.
Sure.
They would have done it in the Lindholm trade. They had the inside track. There was a material disagreement about the valuation of that player. The Calgary Flames believe they can get a first for Chris Tanev. We'll see if they're right. But if they are, I don't think the Canucks are playing in that pond. I don't think even their aggression is going to
push them into that.
That's fair. Push them to a level that they've already decided they're not willing to go to, right? Like, and I think that's the old school. You can't ignore the old school exec stuff. Like, Jim Rutherford's not going to draw a line in the sand and then step over that line. Like, he can't. It's just not how you do business.
If he's already told a trade partner, I'm not doing a first round pick for player X, he's not going to circle back and actually, now that it's at the deadline.
That would be my read on him. But I suppose the only thing would be, you know, I don't believe you can get that.
Yeah.
Oh, you can?
All right, well, fine.
Okay, my bad. I'm back in.
All right.
So I guess maybe. But Rutherford seems to me to be more of a guy who goes and aggressively makes a plan B, as opposed to a guy who's going to step over a line in the sand previously drawn. So
I guess the question for me is just, like, what other plan Bs develop?
Well,
and how big is the gap between Tanev and plan B?
And here's the other one to monitor on Chris Tanev, right, which is, even if he gets dealt to Dallas or Edmonton, mm-hmm. or the Canucks are going to be in on him come mm-hmm. July, you know, like, without question. And sort of the drama for me is really the Toronto thing. Like, in the event that Toronto gets him,
do they sign?
Does he still shake loose? And I think there's a sense that, you know, if he ended up in the Maple Leafs organization, maybe he's not someone the Canucks chase come the summer. Any other team, I think that'll still be a consideration for the team, whether or not they pay and spend assets to get him at the deadline. That's the dynamic there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I just want to run through a few other tidbits from Rick Dhaliwal here, and maybe we can put a pin in them and kind of dive into them in a little bit more detail later in the show as we continue with the whiteboard. Just update on Kessel. Emphasizing again, this is Rick Dhaliwal on Halford and Brough this morning. Canucks are taking it slow, haven't decided if he could play games with Abbotsford. There is a path to him doing that by signing a PTO. So, you know, as much as we kind of all see where this is going, it feels like the Canucks are also, and I think this is very wise, right, as we talk about the potential opportunity cost of using salary cap space on Phil Kessel, take it as slow as possible, give yourself as much flexibility to see where it goes and when he's going to be ready. Dhaliwal also says Canucks have indicated they want to keep Teddy Bluger. Wouldn't be surprised if he's the first of their many, many UFAs they try to sign. Dhaliwal also says doesn't believe the Canucks have really reached out to any of their UFAs, including Dakota Joshua, so far. And also mentions Jacob Truscott, Canucks prospect playing at the University of Michigan, apparently won't sign with the Canucks. That's the latest from Rick Dhaliwal. He'll be a UFA this summer. Truscott, fourth round pick in 2020, recently ranked seventh in the Canucks system by your colleague Scott Wheeler at The Athletic. So sounds like he will not be signing with the Canucks and will become an unrestricted free agent this summer. Again, we can get back into some of those rumors and reports from Rick Dhaliwal later on in the show.
What are your thoughts on the... What was the one before Truscott?
No contact with UFAs so far.
No, Bluger.
Oh, Bluger.
What would your quick gut reaction be to Bluger being the club's priority?
He's a center.
Yeah.
And he probably hasn't increased his cost as much as Dakota Joshua has.
Mm.
And he might be, like, more realistic to get him done. Because I just keep coming back, as much as everyone's saying, oh, they got to lock Joshua up, What would you have to pay Dakota Joshua right now to get him to forego unrestricted free agency? A lot.
3.5 times 4?
Yeah. And so
I'm not getting
No, seriously. Like he is really, and he's close to getting more than that, depending on what he does in the playoffs.
He's one goal away. Yeah, he's one big goal in the playoffs away from being Brian Bickell.
Like a goal and a fight in the playoffs. And it's like one of the guys on July 1st.
You're dead on.
So I don't know how you pay him to forego that opportunity. Whereas Bluger, look, he's having a great year. Don't get me wrong. He's going to get a raise. It just feels a little more viable, and he's a center. So that would be my read on it.
My concern would be the Pew Suter of it all, which is that you've got a $1.6 million.
You already have Pew Suter? Yeah.
Yeah, whereas like Dakota Joshua is kind of one of one.
It's true.
Now, I'm sure internally the story would be, well, we've got Vasily Podkolzin.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a lot to ask Vasily Podkolzin to score goals at a 20-goal rate and be tough and defensively reliable and elite penalty killer.
That's a lot.
You know, like Dakota Joshua's really changed the trajectory of his career across these last 2 years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Lineup notes, speaking of Dakota Joshua, he will not play Saturday against Winnipeg. Rick Tocchet did not have any other update for us on Tocchet's or on Joshua's timeline, I should say. So we'll see what develops. The Canucks are on the ice at practice right now. I believe our guy Randeep Janda is there. Only thing I've seen is that power play one out early, getting in some practice on the ice for the Canucks. So if there's any other lineup information about the Canucks or news or notes from Tocchet, we will pass it along to you throughout the course of the show. Playoff odds update. Canucks win. Edmonton loses. So the Canucks now have a 78% chance to win the Pacific Division. Interestingly,
wow.
Edmonton and Vegas really neck and neck for second now. Now, that mostly affects who's going to have home ice in their very, very likely first-round playoff series, but they're right neck and neck, 11 and 10% chances to win the division. And then as you look at the bottom of the Western Conference playoff race, you know, St. Louis beats Edmonton last night. Nashville gets rocked. Calgary loses. Seattle wins. So it's just like a really mixed night of results. So you're looking at a pretty tight spread. Minnesota, St. Louis, Nashville, Calgary, Seattle, all projected to finish between 89 and 87 points. So really like a five-way toss-up. Basically a roll of the dice between those five teams to see who was gonna be in that second wild card spot. And of course, fairly likely, not a guarantee by any stretch, but fairly likely that could end up being the Canucks' first-round playoff opponent.
Yeah. The Blues.
The Blues.
I mean, they've
the
really...
The model really doesn't like the Blues as much as they've been hot recently. It's still very, very low on them as a team. So they're still only a 20% chance to make the playoffs.
But it feels like they
Minnesota's like 33%. But the Blues feel like they've kind of got the inside track now a little
100%.
Bit.
100%. They've given themselves a bit of a lead. That was a pretty impressive 4-goal outburst for them against a very good Oilers team. Canucks, for the betting odds, the Canucks and the Jets have opened. Canucks have opened as -130 home favorites. Jets +110 road dogs. That's pretty close to just a home ice advantage gap from Vegas in their assessment of the Canucks and the, you know, frankly, reeling of late Winnipeg Jets. Over-under is set at 5.5. Six. I guess six is consensus. You can get it at 5.5 in some places. With steam on the over, you can get plus money on the over. Hellebuck remains the favorite to win the Vezina, by the way, -175. Demko, +325. We're going to get the Vezina finalist matchup, right?
Yeah.
Right?
I think, 100%. Which Rick Bonus and Rick Tocchet aren't shying away from that on Saturday night.
They better not.
They're not going to tap. No, that would be stunning to me.
Yeah, the Brassois,
especially
Casey DeSmith matchup.
The Canucks have a back to back coming up right on Monday and Tuesday. So like, there's your DeSmith game. One
totally.
Of those games. Come on, it's going to be Demko.
This is a big one for Demko personally, right? And you'd hope that the team is prepared to, lay out for their star netminder, because, you know, get a shutout or make a couple really big saves against Hellebuck, narrow
Huge.
Narrow that gap Once again here.
Absolutely huge. By the way, okay, that's the whiteboard for today. And by the way, we will talk to Ken Wiebe, who covers the Jets, at 1 o'clock a little bit more about Winnipeg's season. Got to pass this along, though. We got a metal pole update from Parker and Chilliwack, who, of course, texted in yesterday saying that he blacked out on the job site after being hit in the head.
The smelling
with
salts
the metal
story.
Pole. Yes, and then your laugh woke him up, a la smelling salts, from being unconscious. Parker and Chilliwack just texted in, listened to the podcast yesterday. Thanks for your kind words. I am okay. By some miracle, I have no concussion and nothing broken, just a nasty bruise and a sore nose. That's from Parker and Chilliwack. We're so glad to hear that, Parker. Thank you for confirming that you're okay. And yeah, be safe. Be safe out there, everyone. We'll take a break. Get your text in, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots more Canucks talk on the way here on Sportsnet 650.